that radio stations. Good, 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 good. Now, I have told the Prime Minister that we will shut them down within 12 months.
As you will see, sir, they're not, in fact, outside of the law at the moment, sir.
You see, that's the whole point of being the government. If you don't like something, you simply make up a new law that makes it illegal.
Flying under the CRTC's radar, you're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Speaking of which, I think we might also start working on legislation to outlaw that haircut of yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
The sun still shine on a dead end street. Will the road still roll out of broken concrete? Is there anything left for a sinner like me? I'm tired of talking about Sunday. All the giving, giving out the dog. Nothing is forgiven.
Well, I'm giving you that song for you. Show folks, as we had a little break there in terms of the intro song we had there going. I threw the notes down and it hit the space bar and stopped
pause
what we were
music.
Doing.
Stop, okay.
Pause the music. Yeah, so there we go. Team's here with you. Jason, how are you?
Yeah, doing pretty good.
Song you're listening to tonight is from the 16th studio album, as Bon Jovi is back.
Oh.
Bon Jovi's new song, Living Proof, off their new album Forever, came out last week. Fade them back in a little bit here. It marks the first album for the New Jersey Rockers after Bon Jovi's vocal surgery that happened in 2022.
Huh.
So John Bon Jovi got vocal surgery. Doesn't sound like they missed a beat, though. Not a bad song. So that's their new song, Living Proof, off their new album Forever. Again, it was released last week. Just so you, if you're going to look for it or going to download it or going to listen to it anywhere, you're looking for that one. If you want to get on that, so we'll fade them out. We'll bring them back on at the end, though, in terms of having them on. How's your week going, Jay?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Better than the Oilers, is what you're saying?
Definitely. Definitely.
Oilers, poor guys. Game 3 goes tonight for those that are maybe watching the Stanley Cup Final. I haven't watched a game yet, to be honest. I've been watching other series. We'll talk about those in a second. Mm-hmm. But for those that are maybe worrying a little bit about the Oilers' chances, some bad news based on the numbers that we have here.
Yep.
NHL records show that teams that trail 0-2 in the final end up losing the series. And they have just a 10.4% chance of winning the series. So not good. Basically a 1 in 10 chance. All-time teams that lead 2-0 are 48-5 in the final. So Panthers got a little bit of momentum, I'll say, based on that 2-0 lead. And just for the record, the winning percentage climbs to 92.7% for teams that go up 2-0 in the final when starting the series at home, which Florida did.
Mm-hmm.
Their record is an impressive 38-3 in the final. So not good. Oilers fans, though, not all hope is lost, though. Here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 25 Stanley Cup Finals, 15 times did a team trail 2-0, and they came back to win Game 3 in 10 of 15 of those series. So Game 3 mm-hmm. gives you a 667 winning percentage if you're playing at home, because all 10 of those wins came on home ice. So
nice.
Oilers got a chance to win Game 3 tonight. Based on numbers, they might be able to do that. For Panthers fans, though, if you're going, no, we're going to crush them tonight, it's over. Only twice did teams that were down 2-1 after Game 3 go on to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So not
good odds.
Not good odds for the Oilers in terms of that. Panthers got a better chance there. However, the last team to rally after being down 2-0 was the 2011 Boston Bruins, who defeated the Vancouver Canucks in that series. So... You were saying that story prior to
the
Bruins caught wind of
Kevin Bieksa has denied it every time it's come up, but it's the story from Zdeno Chara that heading into games 3 and 4 of that series when they were down 2-0, he noticed that the Vancouver Canucks were practicing lifting the Stanley Cup on the ice.
That's not good.
And use that as fuel. It might be a Michael Jordan-esque, just make up something to be mad about so you go in with fire and can win. But whatever it worked.
Boston won four of the next six, that's for sure. Yeah. Takeaway, how forward does neutralize McDavid and Draisaitl? We talked a little bit about how that would happen with the three lines that they're rolling out there against that team. But in two games, Edmonton has outshot Florida by a 51-47 margin. They have the lead in shots, but the goals have been decidedly in Florida's favor at 7-1. Has the real Stuart Skinner stood up here? Are we seeing the actual Stuart Skinner now with the way that Florida's getting to the front of that net?
I think so. As unfortunate as it is, I don't think he's playing to the level that you need to win a Stanley Cup, because you've got Sergei Bobrovsky at the other end who's playing fantastically. He's worth every single dollar of that $10 million contract.
50-51 shots stopped already.
Yeah, so I think it's equal parts the way Florida's playing and the kind of collapse that has happened with the Edmonton defense, because they're simply not rising to the challenge like they did the last, basically all the way through the playoffs, where they made Stuart Skinner's job so much easier with where they were having the shots come from, the limiting of shots.
Right, but we said the same problem, though, that they had. Like they were able to neutralize Dallas because Dallas was bigger and slower. We're talking about a faster, more aggressive team now in Florida, though.
Yeah.
Like they come at you in waves.
Yes, and I'm reminded of the Vancouver series where that team is really fast and really skilled, and how do you shut that down? And I mean, you've kind of got that problem here with Florida, where you can roll those lines. They're incredibly fast and skilled, and it's like maybe Paul Maurice has learned his lessons from, you know, when he was here with the Jets, where it's like you can't just have grit and sandpaper and think that's going to help you win a cup. You need to have grit and sandpaper, but also just like run the opponent over with how skilled your team is.
Well, and not just that. I mean, he's getting, again, contributions from everywhere down that lineup. But I mean, the guys that you kind of don't expect are the guys that are really causing a lot of headaches there too, right?
Yep.
So we'll see if they can make it a 3-0 lead, or if Edmonton can rally and maybe get one back tonight.
The funny thing for me is, like, is it going to be Dale Tallon builds up a team for a number of years, and then when he's gone, the team finally gets successful?
No, and I'm going to say that's a solid no, because Bill Zito did a lot of the legwork on this one. And Zito is the guy responsible for making the Huberto trade, bringing in Kachuk. He's the guy that basically, I mean, Verhaeghe was already there. That was a Dale Tallon.
That was a colossal miss by multiple teams.
Oh, yeah, entirely. But I look at the guys that have been brought in off waivers, guys that have been brought in off free agency, the Forslings, like they're defense. Brandon Montour, those guys, where I go,
bringing in Reinhardt,
oh my
Bennett,
God. Yeah.
Just like basically bringing in three of the top four picks from that one draft.
And I mean, you can say that Tallon maybe missed with the whole Bobrovsky setup, you know, way back when he first signed that contract. But what Paul Maurice has discovered is that if you play a specific type of defense in front of Bobrovsky, he gets better.
Yeah.
And that's really the difference right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens there, because again,
fantastic.
McDavid and Draisaitl got to find a way to get on the score sheet. We'll see, and we'll have to see if Evander Kane is may be out for tonight as well.
It looks like it. It looks like him and Nurse are both out for tonight,
which could be a huge drawback.
Because Nurse wasn't even at practice. Kane was there,
but Knobloch said he wasn't worried about that. Which I mean, whatever that means, but.
Because he probably was like, hey, you're not going to play tonight. And then Kane was there, and he's like, yeah, he had a short conversation with Knobloch, and then he left.
Yeah.
That was so it. I think neither of them are playing.
We'll have to see, though. Obviously, going down 3-0 would be almost catastrophic, but we'll have to see if Edmonton can right the ship a little bit, maybe get one back tonight, but whatever.
Just shades of the 1967 Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, let's not bring that up. One of the series I've been watching, though, and again, this is why I've been watching the Stanley Cup, the Calder Cup has been absolutely just ridiculous right now.
Yes.
Calder Cup final will begin tomorrow. We finally have two teams that have narrowed down the vast number of teams in the AHL. The Hershey Bears will host the Coachella Valley Firebirds in a rematch of last season's Calder Cup final. Hershey, for the record, won that series in their 12th Calder Cup in franchise history, with a 4-3 win over the Firebirds in that series. Mm-hmm. For Coachella Valley, though, this is their second appearance in as many seasons of existence. Which again, Dan Bylsma write that into your resume, man. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. Coachella Valley booked their ticket on Saturday after eliminating Milwaukee in five games. Milwaukee scored just two goals in that series once. 7-2 win to extend the series to 3-1. In three of the five games that were held to a single goal, the Firebirds have allowed more than two goals, only four times in 12 playoff games they've played so far.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not scoring goals, you better find a way to shut this Firebirds team down, because they're coming at you.
Yeah.
Hershey, meanwhile, qualified for the final last night after a nearly historic collapse. They were up 3-0 in their series against Cleveland last Thursday. The Monsters became just the fifth AHL team to force a Game 7 after being down 3-0 in the series.
Yep.
Not only did they go to a Game 7, but that game required overtime last night, but Hershey's Garrett Rowe finally killed the Monsters at 7:38 of the extra period, as Hershey will go back to the final seeking their 13th AHL opponent. Ironically, they were the second team after rallying back to lose that. The other team that lost? The Hamilton Bulldogs. In 2011, the Houston Arrows defeated the Hamilton Bulldogs after Hamilton had rallied from a 3-0 deficit.
Awesome.
And it went right down to the wire. John DeSalvatore scored with a minute 13 remaining to give Houston a 4-3 win.
Nice.
So, yeah. So that's crazy. The other ones that happened, 1960, Rochester Americans defeated the Cleveland Barons. 89, Adirondack defeated Hershey. And in 2013, Wilkes-Barre Scranton defeated Providence in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so there you go. For those that don't, I'm just going to take a quick look here in terms of the other stuff that's here. Bears have been stingy in allowing goals as well. The opponents have only scored more than two goals in four of the 14 games they've played. Mm-hmm. So they've been just as stingy as Coachella Valley. Cleveland did push four of the seven games to overtime, though. So, I mean, Hershey hasn't been winning by large margins or anything like that. They haven't been as invincible as they were in the regular season. They put up 53 wins, 53, 14, 0, and 5 in the regular season.
Oh, my God.
They didn't lose back-to-back games for the entire season until they ran into Cleveland.
Yeah, which is insane.
That's ridiculous.
It's like that run that Vasilevsky went on.
Well, let me clarify that. Didn't lose back-to-back games in regulation for the entire season. There you go. They did lose a couple of overtime games, but no big deal.
Yeah, but that's still like you got the game to overtime.
Yeah, like that's insane. So when it comes to the Firebirds and Bears, we might be in for another epic final just like we were last year. This will be the first finals rematch since 1991 when Springfield defeated Rochester. It's the first time the same NHL affiliates have competed for the Calder Cup since 1979 when Maine, Philly's affiliate, defeated New Haven, the Rangers affiliate, in back-to-back seasons.
Awesome.
It's the 10th Calder Cup Finals appearance for a Washington affiliate. That ties them with the Buffalo Sabres for the most AHL affiliate finals appearances.
I sit here.
I know you're. This puzzled you before the show as well.
So how many do each of them have?
10 now. They're tied at 10.
So that's 20.
Between Washington 20 and Buffalo.
20 times.
And there's one Stanley Cup between
the two. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's 20 times the trips to the Calder Cup final that has resulted in one Stanley Cup win for the parent club.
Correct.
I think I agree with Sid Sixero where the Calder Cup tells you nothing about the way the NHL team is going to go. Like, because how does Buffalo have such a good affiliate and they've been so bad for so long? How does Washington consistently have such a good affiliate? Because they've had a relationship with Hershey for a long time.
I can answer that pretty quickly if you want. Both Rochester and Hershey are run independently. They're not run by the team. So
there you go.
That gives you a pretty clear indication as to what's going on, because Hershey's management is phenomenal.
Yep.
As is Rochester's.
Yeah, they're getting the benefit of having NHL caliber talent and NHL prospects without the being forced to play players that aren't ready or play systems that don't work.
And when Terry Pegula bought into Rochester, they haven't been back to the same level they have been. So
weird.
It's amazing how that happens, right? In saying that, last season the Bears became the first ever AHL team to win the Calder Cup on a sudden death overtime goal in Game 7 when they beat Coachella Valley. So we went right down to the wire last season. Hershey's looking to become the 10th repeat champion in league history, and the first since they last did it in 2009-2010.
God,
so
that's such a good team.
I mean, Hershey's just ridiculous. Hendrix Lapierre enters the final top scorer for Hershey. He's got 15 points. Coachella Valley has been led by Devin Shore, of all people. He has 11 points. Hunter Shepard comes into the final for Hershey with a 2.16 goals against average and a .920 save percentage. Chris Dreger, who everybody goes, oh my God, like, I forgot about him.
Yeah, you have them. You have him.
2.31 goals against average and a .927 save percentage. Hershey's power play is clicking at a 23.9% efficiency, while their penalty kill sits at 81.4. Coachella Valley is a 20.5% power play efficiency, while their penalty kill clocks in at 78.3. On paper, it looks like Hershey's the better team, but as it stands right now, Coachella Valley's played less games and is basically gearing up, and it has been waiting for almost, you know, a week for Hershey to get their crap together.
Exactly. So. And Hershey went down to the wire, so you got to think there's a little bit of fatigue potentially there.
Yeah. There have been some just incredible games, though, with that. Like that comeback that they had the other night where Joe Snively scored with 50 seconds to go.
Yeah.
And then 17 seconds later, Cleveland scored to tie the game again. Like, that was ridiculous in game six. So we'll have to see, because, I mean, this is going to be probably a good final. But, unreal in terms of what's going on in the AHL. The Kelly Cup final ended as well. That one kind of less ceremoniously, as Florida absolutely just skated circles around
smacked them
Kansas
around.
City. Yeah, they won their fourth Kelly Cup championship in franchise history. They became the first team to win three in a row. Oliver Chow was named this season's Kelly Cup MVP after he led the playoffs in scoring. He also had two shorthanded goals in the final, which was, I mean, ridiculous.
Like, so. It is so hard. I mean, it's proven that it's so hard because they're the only team that's ever done it. But even going back to back in the ECHL is hard because of how much little consistency there is year to year for teams. Like, if you look at the Everblades,
there's a protected list that's put out every year, but it's just the bare bones in terms of getting a team off the ground. Yeah,
exactly. And then you've got, you know, guys that are going up to the AHL, guys that are going over to Europe, guys that are coming out of university or going to university. So you've got all this player movement going around. So
speaking of university, Kyle Newber becomes a three-time champion. Jordan Sambrook becomes a two-time champion. Emin Cormier becomes a first-time champion, as they all were part of the Florida Everblades this year. Kyle Newber was a Guelph Griffin from 2013-2016. Jordan Sambrook with a Brock Badger in 2019-2020. And Evan Cormier also skated with Guelph in 2018-2019. So a couple of U-Sports, or a few U-Sports ties to the Florida success there. But,
yep.
I mean, you look at Florida right now. Tampa Bay has all the Stanley Cup wins. Florida's been crazy over the last couple of seasons. Florida Panthers, that is, over the last couple of seasons, could potentially win a Stanley Cup this year. The Florida Everblades are legitimately the class of the ECHL.
Yep.
Orlando Solar Bears for a long time in the IHL were really good. Like, Florida might be quietly the best hockey state in the country.
I love how the goalposts have been moved so much, because it used to be, oh yeah, well, you know, hockey doesn't work in the South, and then Tampa Bay goes on another run,
right?
Florida turns it around, and like suddenly everyone's like, okay, well, it works in the South, but not in Arizona, only there.
Well, and it may not work in Arizona ever again. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I mean, yeah, that's just
it's incredible. You know, you look at
Dallas as well. Dallas has a great Houston had a great run in terms of their run in the AHL before they became Iowa,
and their time in the WHA.
San Antonio was building a good thing until they got moved to Henderson to become the Henderson Silver Knights. And legitimately, you look at Texas as well. Texas has been really good. California's had a few runs in terms of how good they've been. It's not that hockey doesn't work in the South. It's that we just don't give it enough recognition that it works in the South.
It took a while for the system to get like working down there. Now they've got ownership groups and management that know what they're doing now.
But that's the thing; it happens with every expansion where you know it's going to take you a few years to get onto the right track, and then all of a sudden, let's build.
So, yeah, but it's all about the no state tax thing. That's the only reason it's happening.
Well, I mean, that helps
according
Vegas.
To Alan Walsh.
That helps Vegas, but whatever. I mean, whatever you can do down there, I guess. I mean, Florida, you can make
the joke is that California has really high tax. Texas, and everyone wants to play in California.
I don't know. That LA Kings team is...
Well, they're going to look good next year.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a second as well. But let's get to the big story that came out this past weekend. Because reports broke on Sunday that the Washington Capitals had gone ahead and made the purchase of salary cap reporting website Cap Friendly.
The puns write themselves. The
Caps are now part of Cap Friendly, but whatever. Yep. Cap Friendly is part of the Caps. When the transaction is finalized in mid-July, the Capitals will own all of Cap Friendly and its affiliated tools and application programming interfaces. What that means is basically the Caps own everything, including all the tools and all the calculators that Cap Friendly had designed.
And that is exactly why they made that purchase.
Right.
So what they're going to do is they're going to route the Cap Friendly data, and they're going to maintain, because they've maintained the team that ran Cap Friendly.
Correct. They hired everybody that was part of it. Yeah.
So Cap Friendly is going to just keep running the way that it's been running, and they're going to feed that data through an API to likely the analytics dashboarding system that the Capitals use,
right.
So they can do some things with looking at contract values and expected values and things like that, so they can be a little bit smarter and kind of moneyballing, you know, how they can optimize their spend and their team construction. It's being done is, it's not to just like have all this information on the other teams and what they're spending. It's to enhance their analytics capabilities.
Okay, so let's put the brakes on for a couple seconds, because there's some ridiculousness that did come out with this as well.
Yes.
What stood out from the reports, obviously, was that the site will go dark for in terms of being a public-facing site when the transaction is completed, as, quote, both the Capitals and cap-friendly wanted the site to be publicly available and independently operated through the 2024 NHL draft and the start of free agency, unquote.
Yep.
So you'll basically get a taste of how free agency works, and then they'll basically turn the site off.
And they're kind of doing a courtesy to the other teams.
Sure.
And the reporters, because it's well known that the vast majority of the league used cap friendly as
Elliot
their
Friedman,
tools.
Jeff Merrick talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but
I'm talking about like management.
Oh, yeah.
Teams. There's a famous photo of Brad Treliving where he has it open on his computer.
And there are teams that legitimately were using the services that cap friendly provided as well, which is why I can't fault Ted Leonsis for putting every other team at a disadvantage. If you don't have this API and you are using the API that we just bought, you're screwed now. You have no way of doing that until you develop your own.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck with that.
Yep.
The for sale sign had been up on Cap Friendly for a while. We should probably put that asterisk out there as well.
Yeah.
And that they were looking to sort of be bought by somebody for a while.
But nobody came with a package that they were willing to sell for.
It was curiously leaked, though, the NHL has disliked Cap Friendly for a while. Elliot Friedman, reporting on the NHL, said that the NHL believes they should not be in the business of publishing this stuff, unquote. I don't have a problem with the NHL feeling that way, but it's ignorant to think that they don't have that there's somehow some sort of proprietary information being contained within these contracts.
Yeah.
That the rights and the clauses and the exceptions and everything else that's written into these contracts are somehow owned by the NHL, which they are. I'm not going to fault that, but the information is not going to be publicly discussed at some point.
But legally, they can't. Legally, it's not proprietary. Legally, it is every player in the NHL, it is their legal right. They can go, just like I can go, I could say right now what my employment contract at work, how much I get paid, what my benefits are like. I'm fully within my rights to say all of that out to the public,
right? But that's
and
the
it's
thing,
the exact
though,
same for the players.
These contracts are not NDAs; they're not non-disclosure agreements. They are contracts.
By the way, those are potentially becoming illegal too,
right? But that's a whole different story at that point. But the contract itself can't. It's not like you can't take this contract, scan it into a computer, and then publish it somewhere.
Yeah,
like that's legal according to what's under the law of the land.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why the NHL feels that. I understand why they may not like this when it comes to overall hockey-related revenue and exposing the league in terms of what's being spent. And I know that there's a lot of discussion, and certainly Cap Friendly helped this discussion about what Tampa Bay did and what Vegas did in terms of salary cap circumvention.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, though, that conversation allows fans to buy into the NHL a lot more, because the transparency matters here.
And the amount of conversation, the amount of airtime we have spent talking about the salary cap and what players are going to get paid and how that's going to work within the salary structure of the team.
Yeah.
And the amount of airtime that takes up, and the amount of conversation that takes up keeping people engaged in the NHL and engaged with their teams, cannot be understated. It is incredibly important. But we do know, even if that information wasn't public, there would be leaks galore about what the Lightning are doing, what the Leafs are doing, what the Knights are doing with the salary cap and all the circumvention. That would all still get reported, but it would be the NHL being able to be the NHL and being secretive about absolutely everything that does not benefit them in some way. They want to keep this locked down because they see a way that it now benefits them to hide that information, right?
But if you're gonna take this into a CBA negotiation where you don't want the public knowing how much money you're spending, how much money you're gonna make available to to players to be able to be spent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, $88 million is the salary cap for next year. It's not hard to punch $88 million into a calculator and multiply by 32 to know that hockey-related revenue is going to be that amount of money. That's your hockey-related revenue that we're willing to...
At bare minimum.
Right, at the very least. If you're trying to hide money from the PA, you're going to be in for a long legal battle from now on because the CBA legitimately determines how much money the players can get.
Yeah, but that's exactly... It just gives the NHL another tool in their arsenal from a public PR standpoint, right?
Right.
Like, remember what the conversation was going into the 2005 lockout, where it was all the NHL crying poor, coming hat in hand, saying, oh, well, we need to do the salary cap because we can't afford it. Players are getting paid too much and it's getting out of hand. We need to start reining this in. We need to bring this new system in and blame the players. They're the ones holding out and blah, blah, blah. Every single time the CBA comes up, they come and they cry poor,
same thing every
and
they
undercut how much they're actually making.
But the NHL could have put a stop to this a long time ago, because when Cap Geek came out in 2015, they were the go-to for everybody. And then, unfortunately, the Cap Geek's owner passed away, unfortunately, and you know, rest his soul. But then Cap Friendly jumped on board and said, you know what, we'll carry on and we'll keep that legacy going.
Mm-hmm.
And the NHL could have gone to them at any point and gone, we'll buy you right now to keep your mouth shut.
Yep.
Like, I mean, they wouldn't say that last part, obviously, but we'll buy you right now and bring you on board so you can help us do a lot of the salary cap stuff.
Yep.
And nobody would have said a word before it got super popular.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 3 years, since the whole COVID thing hit, and analytics has become the big talking thing, this is where the NHL messed up. And now they're going, wait a minute. We've let the cat out of the bag. Now we got to herd cats for the next couple of years.
They didn't say anything because it benefited them to have that information publicly available while the cap stayed flat.
Right, but this is what I'm saying, though, is that if you're going to complain about where it's going, you can't complain about letting the cat out of the bag now.
Like,
if the cat goes and eats all of your prized birds, you can't complain about what you've done here.
Yeah, but now they're going to do it. They want to do it because it benefits them to hide that information. Because remember, we've seen a fairly significant jump in the cap this year.
So,
we're projecting a similar jump next year. It's the line is starting to go up, and it is totally incumbent on the league to be like, okay, we need to do something to rein in this information so we can swing this in our favor and we can hide as much as possible.
I'm going to put this out there for somebody, and there aren't a lot of people that are listening that probably have that, you know, computer science degrees, and I hope that you know somebody is that does this, but go and scrape that site and start a new one.
Yeah.
I'm begging you to do that, because legitimately it has become a tool that is indispensable when it comes to a lot of hockey chatter now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the Capitals own it and will not allow it to continue past mid-July is an absolute travesty to this sport, when every other sport has something like this.
Yes. Exactly. That's the thing, is every other league, this is where the NHL is being the NHL, and I hate it, because the NBA doesn't care about this. The NFL certainly doesn't care. They don't even have guaranteed contracts, so it's a big part. Like, signing and moving deals is a big part of it.
Right.
The MLB capitalizes off the fact that they publicly report the salaries, because they get to, whenever a Shohei Ohtani-sized deal is signed, that becomes chatter and talk about the MLB for months. So, of course, they want all that information out there.
But this is the thing, though, is that you'll get the standard, you know, terms were not disclosed now on virtually every contract, and nobody will know exactly what you're talking about, because terms are not disclosed. NHL teams don't have to reveal this anymore.
Yeah.
The fact that Dominique Zrim, who owned Cap Friendly, worked for two NHL teams, likely got a lot of this information through his employment and made a lot of good contacts where he can continue to rely on those contacts. But the fact is that without this information now, it's going to become a lot harder to pin teams down on bad contracts and to pin down players who legitimately should be either bought out or promoted because of who they are.
That's another thing that they're going to want to do, is they want to protect themselves so nobody calls them stupid, because these are all egotistical, whiny little babies who don't like being criticized.
But at the end of the day, though, if you can't ask about, you know, Jesper Kotkaniemi's terrible contract about being bought out, or the fact that Pierre-Luc Dubois could be bought out for $1 million and nobody's doing it.
Yeah.
that the fact that nobody is going to be able to do that anymore because we don't know what the terms of those contracts are.
Yeah, because those GMs and their owners are like, oh, people are making fun of me. Gary, stop them from making fun of me.
But if you don't like it, then stop signing bad contracts. Oh, right, you're GM. You have no you can't control
a dummy.
That. But anyway, I think it's a travesty that's being taken away. I understand what the Capitals are doing to put themselves in a good position.
Yeah, it's a super smart decision
right,
on their part.
Right. But the fact is that they're removing it from the larger picture now, and it's going to make that hole that much bigger in terms of what the NHL can use this to.
I really hope that somebody has already... Well, it's probably going to be on some kind of archival website, but I hope somebody has scraped that code so they can recreate at least the interface.
Yeah.
And try and recreate the system behind it, because a lot of it was, or it was pretty much entirely done by hand.
Well, we'll see, I guess.
So
I have no idea what's going to happen at that point, but whatever. There's been a pile of updates that came out this week about new looks for the NHL and certainly what's going to happen. I just want to point out, though, that Icetetics, fantastic website. I have nothing against the guys that run it. The guy that runs it, he's an excellent resource for a lot of
stuff. He's a great designer, too. He's very very experienced and knows design very
well. Reported that the Minnesota Wild will rebrand for the 25-26 season. The rebrand was supposed to see the team colors revert back to the old North Star days in Kelly green and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got excited about it. Everybody was super excited because they're going, yes, finally, we're getting the North Stars look. Yep. This is exactly what we wanted. That is until it got to the Minnesota Wild, who came back and said, that ain't happening.
Yep.
And Icetetics was good. They went back and retracted the story, and he made a long Twitter sort of, reasoning behind it where he said, I didn't check my sources. I should have done that. I was excited about this as well. I thought I wanted to get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
It just comes down to the whole hockey and blogging where, and again, I'm not trying to fault bloggers. I'm a blogger myself, but it comes down to knowing A, who your sources are, and B, verifying all information that you get.
So the first, standard...
First is great as long as first is right.
So the thing that we talked about, being a journalist and, somebody who broke news all the time, the thing about breaking news is you cannot take what one source says and report that as fact. You don't want to report anything as fact until, you have documentation that verifies that thing is actually true.
Correct, yeah.
You hear it straight from the horse's mouth.
Multiple sources.
Don't confirm it as fact until the team actually puts that information out themselves. If you do receive a tip from somebody, go find a second source that will independently corroborate that. That's kind of what our standard was. If you hear it from two different people,
I agree.
You can report that as a rumor. You can report that. You can say that it has been reported or that sources have said. But until you hear it straight from the horse's mouth, you get a press release, you get a confirmation from a PR team or the people involved, do not say anything.
And I've had that happen a couple of times. Again, being a blogger, that you get information from somebody and you go, gee, that's a juicy nugget to have if I... But I can't until I verify it. It's got to be verified first.
Like when COVID hit and we had the National Volleyball Championship here, I heard about that basically the day before when it still sounded like it was going on. So I reached out to USport and I reached out to the Bison to confirm.
Yeah.
They both confirmed it to me that it was happening, but they're like, can you please not report anything until midnight when a press release comes out?
Right.
And I was like, okay. Totally fine. I will hold off until you want to report. You want to put this information out, then I'll report it, and I'll put the article out and everything. There were people who were told, and immediately started sharing that information.
Well, yeah,
I'm like, can you please not?
But that's the thing, though, is that first is important to people. Like for the clicks, right?
It was for me. It was like it was a big. This was a big oof from Icetetics.
Right.
And I hope that he has learned his lesson.
Said, and he said from now on he will double down on all nuggets of truth that he gets because for him verification is more important than the actual story itself.
Yeah.
And I totally respect that because he's now saying, you know what, I got overexcited. I was really pumped about this news. I thought it was gonna and then boom, the Wild hit me with it and said, that ain't happening.
It's like Steve Dangle and the whole MLH, Major League Hockey thing.
Yeah.
It's you get really excited. You want to break it because you want to be seen as a news breaker. You want to be first. You want to, you get excited and you say something without really looking into it.
I don't even care if Steve Dangle is working for Sportsnet. I still consider him a blogger. Sorry to say that, but whatever. The nice part, though, is the Wild also did drop a little bit of information about what will be happening next season, or 25-26 season, excuse me. And that's what they're going to pay homage to the Wild's 25-year history. So we might see something along those lines where things
are assuming that it's going to be a Minnesota Wild logo with a silver 2-5 underneath it.
Might be something like that. But yep. We'll have to see.
Or maybe they'll go XXV.
I mean, who knows what they're going to do at this point. But Isetix did confirm, though, that both the LA Kings and Anaheim Ducks will have new uniforms and new primary logos next season. According to his reporting, the Ducks logo is a modernized version of the Mighty Ducks logo in orange, black, and gold.
Thank you.
While the Kings logo is a modernized version of the Gretzky-era logo in black and silver with a new crown design inside the logo.
Isetix did share an image of part of the Ducks logo, reportedly part of the Ducks logo, and it's got like the curved burnt orange stick.
Yeah.
And he showed like kind of mock-ups of like what it might look like, and it looks very good. I'm not sure I'm a fan of the whole like the duck mask logo with the orange glowing eye.
Again,
it's a little bit Zoomer humor for me.
I find it to be very, you know, remember the Mighty Ducks cartoon?
Yeah.
They had that
in there.
It's that logo to me, but we'll have to see what it looks like when it finally hits.
I can't wait until we swing around and they bring back the King's Shield logo with the lion with the sunglasses on.
Oh, yeah. We'll
Can't wait till that era comes back.
More Jersey news. Cyril Leader, you might not know that name, but Cyril Leader is the president of the Ottawa Senators. He told Ian Mendez that the team is working on a third jersey that will be predominantly red for the 25-26 season. Might we see the return of the O logo?
But I think that's the most likely. I'm terrified that they're just going to bring back that red alternate jersey they had.
The half-facing Senator?
Not the front-facing. The one they had a couple years ago where they used it as their primary their home jersey for a little bit. But it was their black jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
But the black was red and the red was black.
Oh, that was awful. Yeah,
that one looked really dumb.
Dave Pagnotta reported that Utah will have a jersey at the June 28th draft. It's expected to be black in color with the word Utah across the chest. There was a release just about an hour ago, Jason, as you confirmed, that it's basically the Winnipeg Ice with the word Utah in diagonal letters across the chest.
It's literally the exact same template.
Yeah.
Same colors, same template. It's got Utah across the chest.
Dear Wenatchee Wild, you might want to get your lawyers involved.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. When I saw a few of the names, like Yeti, Blizzard, all Glaciers, like all the ice-related ones, I was like, you're just doing the Kootenai / Winnipeg Ice thing.
Right.
Have you not looked outside to other leagues and made sure you're not stepping on anyone's toes? Like,
no, we don't do
at this point, just call them Jazz.
I mean, you could just legitimately have another musical team with the Blues in there. I mean,
yeah.
You'll go with something else. So, as you may have heard, folks, I don't know if anybody's aware of this. If they haven't been paying attention, we're going to make you very aware of it now. Fanatics is going to take over making on-ice jerseys for the NHL next season.
Yep.
Fanatics, who has a great reputation. The uniforms will be made in the same factory, however, outside Montreal that's making the NHL's on-ice uniforms for the past 49 years, so that would be the old CCM factory that Reebok and Adidas bought as part of their acquisition way back when. That's some good news when it comes to jersey quality, as CCM made very good products. It also sounds like Fanatics hired the team that worked there, which basically means that the high-quality product that CCM / Reebok was making will continue to be somewhat high quality. I say that with tongue-in-cheek because Reebok's first attempt at the edge jerseys were awful.
They were doing a little bit too much, I think.
But at least we know that quality control is there when it comes to the on-ice product.
So
here, hold on, before you even say anything. I'm a CCM fan because they made really good jerseys. I don't understand why we can't go back to that template now.
I would assume because it's proprietary to CCM.
But Reebok bought CCM.
Yes, but that
Reebok Adidas, sorry, bought CCM.
But now it's not Reebok Adidas anymore.
But Fanatics owns the NHL, so if you're just buy the damn template from Adidas and make proper looking jerseys.
Well, they're going to use the same, like, the thing that for me where it's like, okay, it's going to be at least for a couple years, going to be fine because they're using the same material and the same templates that they have been using. The thing, like, where Adidas, because Adidas took over and they had a couple years to develop the technology that they were going to use and the template they were going to use before it switched over to them.
Yeah, it was garbage.
Yeah. Reebok was even worse.
Right.
Because they took the limited time that they had and put out.
But they thought they could put in science into a jersey. And you know, everybody is, you know, all jerseys are going to be 6% lighter, which means players will be 6% faster. Here's the thing.
That's not how that works.
If everyone is 6% faster, no one's faster.
But also, that's not how that works.
But that's, I mean,
you can't just make it 6% lighter and say you'll be 6% faster. But, that's not how physics works.
There was a whole like calculation they did or whatever. I'm just using the numbers that I remember from whatever. But again, if everybody is 6% faster, no one is faster. Stop saying that. It doesn't work that way.
Yes.
That's like saying if all F1 cars had tires that made them 10% faster, the whole thing is 10%. No, they're not. Everything is still the same speed. It's all the same speed.
Yes.
It drives me nuts. Anyway,
yeah.
So that made me angry with the whole Reebok thing. But here's where things go downhill. Because, again, people like to wear jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to deny it. You see it at every game.
Yeah, I love wearing jerseys.
Authentic on-ice game jerseys will now cost you $425 USD.
I hate it.
A premium jersey, which is a replica on-ice jersey.
I also hate their stupid new naming convention.
Is a $230 cost. And a breakaway jersey, which is the original replicas, are $175 a piece. That's madness. Madness.
So what's the difference between those last two?
An on-ice and a premium. So on-ice is the actual ones that are
like the authentic one with the
premium is it's a replica of the on-ice, which means there's not enough. They're basically cutting out some of the features that they wear. And the breakaway is just the replica. It's got none of the on-ice stuff.
So the premium is just like a little special.
The premium is the cheap way of looking like you have an on-ice jersey. It's again, this is madness. And again, for transparency, it should be noted that the NHL became a Fanatics investor in 2017, 1 year after they awarded a 16-year merchandise contract to Fanatics.
So
you're basically lining your own pockets?
We are seeing the consequence that happens basically across industries. We're seeing it. I mean, it's how Canadian telecom works. But you acquire a product. You acquire a key component to your business. You do it to cut costs or make extra profits, whatever. You're double dipping. However, what that does is now Fanatics is the only manufacturer who can provide NHL merchandise. They're the only one that's making it. They are owned by the NHL. The NHL, there is no competition in the market now. And the NHL, it behooves them to make more and more money every single year. There's no innovation. There's no need to do anything. Like, you're just trying to make extra money. And we're going to see, and we're already seeing it with the whole Fanatics jerseys and the way that they're doing things now. We're seeing the natural outcome we see in every single industry where this happens, where the costs continue to go up, the quality continues to go down, and we're locked in with a crappy product because there's a higher price.
There you go.
Because it does not behoove them, and it actually de-incentivizes them to do a better job, because doing a better job costs more money. So it's not about making the best experience for the consumer so the consumer sticks around and the consumer continues to want to buy. You just corner the market, you create a monopoly, and you get to charge whatever for whatever junk you're throwing on the shelves.
Hey, welcome to the NHL.
Welcome to how modern capitalism works.
So I hate it because I know that, having worked in the industry a little bit, I know that jerseys cost anywhere between $50 to $100 to make in terms of both manufacturing costs and actual like staffing costs for the people that are sewing it together. So charging anything more than $150 for a jersey legitimately seems like a kick in the you know what's.
Yep.
Because you're getting ripped off insanely high by the cost of a jersey isn't even the cost anymore. That's the problem. So whatever. And they can say, oh, we put research and development, we poured all this money. No, you didn't. It's a sweater. It's legitimately a polyester sweater.
Like,
don't give me that crap.
All you need to do is use the same material they were using in, like, the 80s and 90s.
Well, don't use sateen so much, but, I mean, go back to the poly. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but... let's get on with
sublimated logos. Let's do it.
We got 15 minutes, and we got to go. We got a couple of bigger stories. We got to plow through here. As you may have heard, Minnesota won the Walter Cup. We talked about that last week. 8 days later, there was absolute chaos as GM Natalie Darwitz was fired from her position by the PWHL just a few days before the PWHL draft. Rachel Blount of the Star Tribune wrote, "Quote: According to league sources, Darwitz's departure comes after she clashed with." Head coach Ken Klee, who has the support of several teams' veterans, including captain Kendall Coyne Schofield. A source said Klee will be acting as the GM and will make the team's picks at the draft, which also resulted in a massive amount of chaos.
Yep.
Among the many things that Darwitz did, though, and I want to make sure we highlight a few of these, she secured the Xcel Energy Center's game as the rink for home games and the Tria rink for the practice facility.
Which is huge.
She also is raising money for a dedicated space at the Tria rink, and she basically did anything that she was asked to do, including unloading equipment and sweeping floors. She was liked by staff behind the scenes. This kind of feels like the old CWHL PHF efforts to keep things as secretive as possible. What makes things even more bizarre is that Darwitz was offered another position within the PWHL that she declined, and Jana Hefford, who's the VP of operations, told a select few reporters that were invited to a Zoom call that there were, quote, a ton of factors, unquote, that led to a month-long investigation and a review by an outside organization, which included interviews with players and staff.
There was not a ton of factors. It was Kendall Coyne Schofield.
So for those
there was that, one factor.
So for those that don't know, Kendall Coyne Schofield did not join the team for training camp immediately. In fact, she waited until Charlie Burggraf was gone and then joined the team after Ken Klee was named the new head coach. Mm-hmm. Ken Klee, of course, coached the U.S. team for a number of years, which Kendall Coyne Schofield played on. It almost sounds like Kendall Coyne Schofield is calling the shots in Minnesota right now.
It,
based upon everything that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to, again, I'm not, I have zero proof of this, so don't take me up on this at face value. But the way that it looks right now is that she is calling the shots
100%.
When it comes to how close she is to Billie Jean King and how close she is to the board of directors.
But it to me, it's everything that has been wrong with women's hockey for so long.
I totally agree.
It is just tribalism, factionalism, favoritism, infighting that is poisoning the game from the inside out.
I'm not trying to blame Jana Hefford for this, but Jana Hefford is legitimately protecting the board in this case, not the players and or operation of this league. As VP of operations, your job is to make sure that this league runs smoothly, and to allow a player to legitimately pick and choose who they want running a team is ridiculous.
Like, make no mistake, this happens in the NHL constantly.
Oh, for sure.
There are very well documented situations.
I mean, the whole Connor McDavid and how Knobloch got there.
Yeah, like, the rift between Dubas and Babcock whole problem. Yeah. Like going back to like the Mike Keenan days.
Right. Exactly.
There's stories about this all the time. But you know what it didn't do? It didn't threaten the health of the league.
And I'll say this only because again, the PWHL owns all these teams, so they're wading into team problems right now, which they shouldn't be. At what point do we start seeing this league go, we're selling all these franchises because it looks terrible optically to have this kind of stuff going on? These teams need to manage these problems on their own.
But the thing that separates
the transparency is so important.
It's so
right
important.
Now.
It's so important. But the thing that separates the PWHL in dealing with this issue and the NHL in dealing with this issue is that in the NHL you have 32 owners,
right,
presidents, GMs, and Gary Bettman, who all understand that their job is to do what's in the best interest in the health of the franchises and the league, and not doing what one star player wants.
But this is the option.
You are getting rid of a championship-winning GM.
You can say that, though. But, I mean, again, we'll go back to Connor McDavid and the whole Chris Knobloch setup. Is that legitimately Knobloch was brought in because he has a tie to McDavid?
Yeah, but also Jay Woodcroft wasn't working.
But this is the thing, though, is that
they made a hockey decision.
But Edmonton's decision to listen to one player didn't affect all the other teams, nor the draft, nor anything else that went on.
Like if Chris Knobloch came in and the Oilers continued to crater, that's on the Oilers.
Right, exactly. Nobody else cares.
It's not on
the
league.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't become this big issue.
But that's the problem, though, because they legitimately hired Darwitz, who got the deal at Xcel Energy Center and legitimately had the second highest average attendance all season. They fired the woman who basically made that happen.
Yeah. And they hired the guy, or they promoted the guy who interviewed for her job in the first place.
The other thing that I don't like about this is that Ken Klee, when drafting this week, which again caused chaos, drafted again Britta Kerl. We'll touch on this, not because it matters, but it does matter. Britta Kerl is a very outspoken transphobe,
homophobe, anti-vaxxer,
which
conspiracy theorist
kind of derails the entire PWHL on its basically on who it is.
Like the comments on Instagram have been fantastic.
Well, yeah, when the biggest star in your league, Marie-Philippe Poulin, is scheduled to marry Laura Stacey this summer or next summer, you kind of have a problem already.
And you have many of your stars are openly gay,
and yet they draft a woman who has been outspoken against a number of things. She's a conspiracy theorist. She's an anti-vaxxer. She has a number of things that are going against her. And the response from Ken Klee was, I didn't know about any of that. Are you a madman?
No. You knew about it because you made every other pick except for that one. You sent a lesbian woman there.
But the fact that the league could not step in and go, hey, listen, we understand you want her, but we're going to wait until we have a discussion with her.
Yes. Hey, like the thing that happens in the NHL. I hate giving them credit for this, but hey, at least they're doing something.
Right.
Like, this feels like a pick.
But the NHL, though, investigated Logan Mailloux, investigated the Mitchell Miller, investigated all of those things before the team was allowed to even put them on the roster.
Yeah. And those players came, like, Mitchell Miller sent those letters out before the draft, trying to get ahead of it, knowing what would play out if that became public or when that became public. This feels like the kind of pick, if it happened in the NHL, it would be renounced by the end of the draft.
PWHL is an absolute... I mean, don't get me wrong. The players are fantastic. Yeah.
The on-ice product was great.
Right. What's going on behind the scenes needs to end in a big way, and that means that the people that legitimately are running the league need to get out of their own way.
Yes.
Just get out of the way. You're a problem in that you're legitimately derailing a very good product.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see what happens.
Because you're playing favorites.
Speaking of dismissals, a major one this week in terms of Canada West, when the University of Regina announced that they were dismissing, or at least had mutually agreed to part ways, with Cougars women's head coach Sarah Hodges, after she had spent the last 25 years as the only head coach of that program. Again, she was hired in 1998 to run the program. Her 588 Canada West regular season games behind the bench is a record for hockey coaches in this conference. She led the Cougars to a 2001 Canada West title before falling in the national championship final to the Varsity Blues by a 4-3 score. Again, part of her downfall might have been that, you know, since 2015, 2016, they haven't won a playoff game. They've missed the playoffs in the last two seasons. The last three seasons saw them finish with an 18-51-1-6 record, so not a very good record. But, I mean, it was something else that maybe caught my eye, though, in the reporting. Daryl Davis of the Regina Leader Post said that, quote, Lisa Robertson, the university's director of sport and community engagement and athlete development, would not elaborate on the specifics of Hodges' departure, citing, quote, personnel-related matters, unquote, as reason for confidentiality. Unquote on his report. I don't know what that means. I know she had some philosophical differences with a few players that led to them leaving early, but that doesn't seem like enough.
Yeah. Like, if it was truly mutual, they probably would have said more. Would they not have?
You would think that. But again, it's a confidentiality thing. As it stands, former Cougar standout and kinesiology professor at the U of R, Bryony West McMaster, will take over as the interim head coach for this season. So Regina's going to have a different look behind their bench. Makes you wonder what has to happen in Manitoba for them to see it. If the team revolts on your coach, you would think that would be enough, right? No?
Yeah. Whatever. Oh, when did that happen?
I can't say more than that, but whatever. Just for a little fun, though, do you want to hear a little bit of a laugh? Mm-hmm. The UNB Reds men's hockey coach is looking for an experienced associate coach to step in after they promoted their associate coach to head coach. A 3-year contract on a full-time basis. Do you know what they're paying that coach? As an assistant, as an associate coach?
More than I would expect.
$58,000 to start, $79,182 to finish, if you're in that range per year. How many other men's hockey programs are paying an associate or an assistant coach that kind of money? None. And that's why everybody else is second tier to UNB. Here's a little tip for everybody out there. Pay your damn coaches.
There are a few programs here at Manitoba that are not hockey that are paying their assistant coaches. They are successful.
We don't talk about that very, very much, right?
So. Nope.
For a couple of smaller news stories. Hockey News will become the primary hockey content provider for Yahoo Sports now, which means that we're going to have to see Ian Kennedy's terrible articles on women's hockey more often. San Jose announced today that former Sharks, Chicago Wolves head coach and current assistant head coach Ryan Warsawski will take over as the new head coach for them. Nice. I don't mind that approval. Yeah. He was overseeing the team's defense and penalty kill under David Quinn for the past couple of seasons. Former Blues great Alexander Steen has been named as the replacement for Doug Armstrong as the Blues GM after the 25-26 season.
I find that really interesting.
I don't know how that's going to work, but for him.
I like the fact that it's not a situation where it's a guy coming in and we know he's the heir apparent and at some point he's going to take over. They set a timeline.
Right. There's a deadline here.
Doug is done in 2 years and then it's going to be Steen. I think that's the first time it's ever happened. First time in my memory it's happened.
Yeah, I've never heard of a we will be replacing you date in terms of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you watch the World Championships, you probably notice the Swiss team wearing the Swiss shield with the cross on it. On Wednesday, the Swiss government approved a motion by parliamentarian Damian Mueller that basically came because of the recent appearances by the Swiss national hockey team, who had that coat of arms that they were wearing on their jersey. Mm-hmm. According to Mueller, the association was made aware of the improper use of that coat of arms back in 2018. That they were not supposed to be wearing it.
Yep.
The reason being is that the government says that the only use of that Swiss cross on the coat of arms can be used by the Swiss Confederation. The only group that can.
Yep. Which is the government?
The government says that the Swiss Confederation, so basically like government officials, yeah.
Okay.
By a vote of 28-10 with 2 abstentions, the Senate approved the motion made by Damian Mueller on Wednesday that basically says that it's okay for the hockey teams to wear that. They're doing the country a service.
Yeah.
It still has to go to the House of Representatives, so it hasn't been passed yet, but it seems like the Swiss team will be able to use that in future tournaments without being in trouble with the government.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, what other...
Well, the Czechs had a problem with that for a while as well. They couldn't use the coat of arms. They had to use, the Czech information or whatever.
And I think, wasn't that the same thing?
Belarus had a problem with that as well. There was a couple of teams.
I think Austria uses their coat of arms now, and Finland, in a way, sort of.
Yeah, they had it for a while as well.
Yeah.
Quickly, Hockey Hype Australia, which follows everything AIHL very closely, put out their midseason report card on the Melbourne Mustangs. As you know, we follow that team.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good. The current rating for the Mustangs in terms of their chances of repeating this year was quote-unquote knackered, unquote. Yeah. they said it a lack of consistency in their play, major personnel changes, and general struggle to find an identity as being the problems. The Hockey Hype Australia team does say that a strong finish could be what pushes them back to defending their title, but consistency will obviously be a big factor in that. Yep. Having watched a half dozen games or so, they're not wrong. Consistency is the biggest problem right now with Melbourne, so we'll have to keep an eye on what's going on there. We have some KHL player movement. For those that don't know, I don't know how these players are doing this, but I guess people forget that the KHL has very close ties to Russian politics, but here we go. Alexander Radulov was traded from Akbars Kazan to Yaroslavl Lokomotiv, I can spit that name out, in a surprising move, but he is 37 now. So might just be a leadership thing. Vitiaz Moscow added former Leaf Frederick Gauthier and former Moose defender Dean Stewart. A couple Canadians joining the Russian league. Okay. Former Flame Adam Rzichka joined Spartak Moscow. So they get a Czech player coming over there. Kunlun Red Star Adam Klendening joined Kunlun Red Star, for the 24-25 season. Mikhail Grigorenko and Sergei Plotnikov left CSKA for SKA St. Petersburg. The Metallurg Magnitogorsk signed former Penguin and Sabre Scott Wilson to a deal. He won a Stanley Cup with the Penguins on their last Stanley Cup run. Avangard Omsk brought in former Vancouver Canuck Lyndon Vey. Dynamo Moscow signed former Edmonton Oilers Anton Slepyshov. Amir Khabarovsk is the latest team to give Alexander Galchenyuk a shot. Sorry, I can't. I can only laugh at that. After Mobilist, Yekaterinburg signed Manitoban and German national teams player Brooks Matchek. And Tractor Chelyabinsk made a change behind the bench, hiring former Syracuse Crunch and Canadian junior national team head coach Benoit Gruel to run that team.
Whoa.
Very interesting there.
So,
Just before we go on, I know you got something to say about that, but last two little pieces of news. The OHL announced today that Mississauga Steelheads will relocate to Brampton and become the Brampton Steelhead for the 24-25 season. Mm-hmm. And the Kelowna Rockets announced today their intention to bid for the hosting duties for the 26 Memorial Cup. Nice. If successful, it'll be Kelowna's second time hosting. The last time they did was 2004. There's all your news up to date.
Yes. Is the international transfer ban only for...
Only for CSKA.
Okay.
Because CSKA broke that with the Fedotov whole thing. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. That was my confusion about that.
Nope, you're in the right spot. But CSKA,
I'm just now confused of why a bunch of people are going to Russia.
Right, and that's the big question as to why, what happened, and how come we're seeing all these Canadians and stuff do
and
that.
But did people not know that the ruble is worth like nothing?
Well, I guess that doesn't really matter. But we got to get out of here. Anything you want to say before we go, Jay?
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, enjoy your. Hopefully, the weather will stay nice. But
yes,
that, folks, we're out of here for another Thursday. Stay tuned. Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been the Hockey Show. We'll see you on Thursday next week, everybody. Have a good one.
Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.